It's about 13 seconds after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 6th of September. This is a Juneau afternoon. We're going to be hearing from representatives of the Juneau Public Libraries with an update on activities at the libraries. Also, we're going to hear about the Marie Drake Planetarium and a specific event coming up there. We're going to have some information about the public meeting set for the Mendenhall Recreation Area Master Plan, and also have some members of the school board here to talk about the Board of Education open house for family and community members coming up on the 13th of this month. In addition, of course, to Bird Note, Writer's Almanac, and everything else here on a Juneau afternoon. Stay tuned and listen after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The commission, with the job of looking into the disproportionate rate of violence against Native women and girls across Canada, has formally begun its work. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Marion Buller is British Columbia's first female Aboriginal judge. She spent her summers growing up on a Saskatchewan First Nation. She says some of her childhood friends from that time have disappeared or were killed. They are among the Aboriginal women and girls who disappeared or were murdered, part of the tragedy that Buller is now looking at as the head of the National Inquiry. Buller says she understands the tremendous loss that families of the victims feel, not just families, but entire communities.
We have some very difficult work ahead of us, not only listening to the grief and the pain and the anger of the family members who have lost a loved one, but I also take their strength and their courage to move forward.
Over the next 2 years, Buller and the other four commissioners will look at the systemic causes of the high rates of violence against Aboriginal women and girls. The commission has been given a wide latitude to develop the inquiry process. Many details have yet to be ironed out, and some of those details will be on the table when the commissioners meet this week in Vancouver to set priorities. Buller says she wants to create an atmosphere for the families that's comfortable and respectful, and in the end, a list of concrete, workable, and usable recommendations that will lead to positive change. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Standing Rock Sioux tribal leaders say construction crews have destroyed sacred burial and prayer sites on private land in North Dakota. The Dakota Access Pipeline developer Energy Transfer Partners hopes the project will help the U.S. become energy independent. As Jenny Monet reports, videos and photos circulating online show heated interaction over the weekend between people opposing the pipeline and security workers.
On Saturday, about three dozen activists protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline scaled a fence where bulldozers had begun clawing at the prairie. Then, contracted security personnel show up armed with cans of mace and dogs on leashes. The dogs start charging at the activist. A man gets bitten. The camera slow zooms on his bloody wound.
Why are you letting her dog go after the protesters? It's covered in blood!
That's the voice of Amy Goodman. The Democracy Now! Host and her crew shot and edited the video. Energy Transfer Partners now faces a potential restraining order. Tribal Chairman David Archambault II filed the emergency motion on Sunday, alleging the developer bulldozed over sacred burial and prayer sites before Saturday's attack. The litigation adds to a previous motion filed to stop construction of the pipeline. A federal judge is expected to rule on that case by Friday.
We are prepared. We have an ambitious agenda.
Former Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Councilwoman Phyllis Young says whatever happens, the tribe has a plan in place.
We're prepared to face the court for a decision for us and a decision against us.
For National Native News, Jenny Monet, Cannonball, North Dakota.
Navajo Nation leaders are urging communities to emphasize safety during flood conditions after two people recently died in flood waters on the reservation. According to the tribe, a father and daughter were swept away in Tohatchee, New Mexico, after the daughter reportedly fell in trying to save a dog. Tribal leaders express condolences to the family and say the tragic incident is a reminder to take safety precautions during flooding, including staying away from flood zones. Several areas across the Navajo Nation have recently been struck with flash floods, washing out roads, causing damage to homes, and causing injury and death. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it's just before 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 6th of September. This is a Juneau afternoon. And our first guests today are from the Juneau Public Library System. Beth Weigel and Andy Hirsch, welcome to a Juneau afternoon.
Thanks, Ben.
Hello. Thank you.
And as we were discussing briefly before we went on the air, while listening, multitasking to National Native News, there's a whole host of fun things going on at the library. So where, oh, where do we begin?
Oh, where, oh, where. That's right. Every month we've got all kinds of things that happen. And we put out a calendar of all our events. We post them on Facebook. But this is a quick little rundown for you to summarize everything. So we'll kick off tomorrow evening with our Lego Club at the Valley Library. Every month, Ty Keltner heads over to the Valley Library with all his Lego building skills. And everybody gets together in the teen room and they build for a couple hours. And he usually has some sort of cool challenge. So lots of fun with the Lego Club. And
now, do people have to be members of the Lego Club or can they just show up?
They can just show up.
Very good.
Yep. And we have lots of Legos for people to borrow. Unfortunately, you don't get to take your thing home at the end of the night, but you can take a picture and remember it that way. So we also have some other things going on. We're going to go out into the community this month for we'll have CBJ Day of Play. We're going to be a part of that, but that'll be at the library and at the City Museum as well. So on September 10th, you can go by the Juneau Douglas City Museum at 11:30 till 1 and participate in some of their activities with all their new hands-on exhibits and different things up there. And then at 1:30, you can come over to the Douglas Library, and we're going to put out our labyrinth that we lay down on the floor in the meeting room, and people can do that. We might have a little bear hunt kind of storyboard game inside the library. We'll start our bookmark contest so you can pick up some supplies for that. That'll be great fun. And then on the 15th, we'll officially start our bookmark contest. But you can get a little jump ahead on the 10th if you come to CBJ Day of Play.
That's allowed, an extra
totally.
Little bonus start.
A little bonus, that's right. And you'll have a month to do all the bookmarks you can think of, and that's always a fun yearly event that we love. And we have bookmarks that go back into, like, the 70s. So if you're now a grown-up and you, like, won a bookmark contest when you were a child, we probably have a copy of it somewhere. We're also telling everybody a little bit about some of the things that happen up at the museum. And so they're going to do Geo Juno on the September 14th, and that's all about rocks and how they shape our lives. Kathy Connor and Mike Blackwell give a little talk on that, and that'll be great up there at the City Museum at 7 p.m. And then we're back to our family nights. We have a little switch this year. We're only going to have one family night per month, and it's going to be on the third Thursday of every month, and it's going to be downtown.
And that's a difference because in the past they rotated to the different locations.
We used to have two. Through the variety of things that happen in communities and programs change and things like that, we're downsizing to one because of some different just changes in resources. And so it'll be at the downtown library the third Thursday of the month. So people have to kind of retrain themselves to think about when family night is. But that's where we have our sort of light supper at 5:30, and there's always a program. This month it's Jane Berry. She's a local kinder music person, so they'll be dancing and fun with singing and whatnot. So that'll be a great time. And that always starts at 5:30, so it's the third Thursday every month. Not every month, but in the summer we take a break from it. But every month for the foreseeable future. How's that?
That sounds great. And that's targeted towards younger children, isn't it?
Exactly. So we used to have one that was more towards preschool, and then we had one that was more, that was more inclusive up through, like, the younger grades perhaps. But now it's just family night. So preschool, younger grades, all are welcome for that. And, of course, family members. And then we'll be up at Eagle Crest for Discover Eagle Crest Day at the Base Lodge on September 17th, 11 to 2. We do story times up there. We bring the Legos. We usually set up one of our story paths outside down the ptarmigan or the porcupine chairlift so you can go on a little bear hunt with that as well. And the other big thing that we're planning, it's not happening this month, but in October, we had so much fun with the readings of all the Shakespeare plays and everything. I thought, gosh, what else could we read aloud? And I just thought, well, it might be fun to read that new Harry Potter and the Cursed Child
aloud.
What
a magical idea.
What a magical idea. And, of course, we want to kind of put that around Halloween time. So we're going to be doing that in October. But right now we're looking for people who would like to volunteer and help us with our live community reading. So we have a couple different options for people who are interested in participating as a reader. Some of the roles will precast a little bit, and our friend Julie Copens, Julie R. Copens is going to be our Hogwarts Dramatic Society director for this production or this reading.
So this is going to be a little more staged than some of the first folio readings. A little more preparation.
It's like a reader's theater, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Exactly. A little more preparation, perhaps. Some people, I think, put a lot of preparation into their Shakespeare readings. But at any rate...
Hey, I showed up.
That's right. You did.
I was there.
So Julie York Copens has volunteered to help with our, you know, kind of putting it all together and helping put people into the right roles. But if you're interested in sort of having one of the larger roles, we're going to do this on Thursday and Friday, October 28th and 29th. But you need to let her know by October 8th, starting now. We've got some flyers up, and it's on our Facebook page. And her email is associated with those flyers, but it's jycopens@gmail.com. So let her know what you're interested in doing. If you're kind of more of the person who likes to show up that night and then get really enthusiastically excited about it and say, yes, I want to participate, we're going to have a goblet of fire. So some of the roles will be cast on the spot. We'll have those volunteers that are brave enough to enter their names in the goblet of fire and then pick it out and see what we get.
And that will serve to prevent it from being over-rehearsed.
Exactly. And then we'll also have what we're calling the Muggle Chorus. So there might be times when we need everyone in the audience to make some sort of noise or sound effect or chant. So that'll be part of it. And it's going to be full of all kinds of fun surprises. But right now, if you're interested in being one of those pre-cast readers, get in touch with Julie York Copens with her email address on the flyer, or you can just call the library. Somebody can give it to you. And then we have some other fun things that Andy's going to tell you about.
Yeah, back to this month. we have family night on the third Thursday of the month. Well, on the fourth Thursday of the month, we have a monthly event for slightly older kids. It's for ages 8 and up, and it's Introduction to Coding. And so every month we are having Shay Wilson come in, and he works for the state. He comes in and he presents an activity that kids can work on. And last month it was called Think Like a Computer. And so it was all about how you give computers instructions, and they didn't actually involve writing on or typing on computers itself. It was all on how to get into the mindset. So we'll be doing something similar this month, but I don't know what the activity was going to be yet. It's going to be, you know, I'll find out really soon. And so that's Introduction to Coding. It's at the Valley Library, and it runs from 6:30 to 7:30. And so that's the fourth Thursday of every month. So your Thursday nights just can be really exciting with library programs.
All library.
Yeah.
All library all the time. Well, Andy and Beth, that's just, as always, a wealth of information. And just a reminder to listeners where they can go on the website if they were not taking notes, writing down every word that both of you just said.
Oh, who wouldn't be? Anyway, so you can go to our website, which is www.juno.org/library, or you can find us on Facebook, and we post all of our events there too.
Excellent.
Right. And just another quick reminder, we're also involved with the Juno Votes Initiative, and we've got some different debates and things like that going to be hosted at the Valley Library as well.
So there's three upcoming debates that I just want to mention very quickly. So on Monday, September 19th at the 360 Studio, we are helping host the school board debate. So that's from 5:30 to 7:30. or to 5:30 to 7. So the first hour will have moderated Q&A with the panelists, and the last half an hour is going to be Q&A with the audience. So if you have any questions that you want to ask your school board potential representatives, you should show up, listen to what they have to say, and then you'll have options to ask questions. The following night, which is Tuesday, September 20th, is the Assembly candidate debate, and that is going to be at the Valley Library. 5:30 to 7, same format. So the first hour, we'll have questions prepared in advance, and the last half hour is Q&A with the audience. So if there's anything you want to ask your potential Assembly members, you know, come and be heard and ask your questions.
Excellent. Well, that's great to know that the library is participating in the electoral process as well, because an informed electorate is obviously an electorate that makes more informed choices.
That's right.
And before we went on the air, Andy, you mentioned something called lynda.com.
I did.
Tell us a little more about that, please.
I would love to. So lynda.com is this online resource that provides information on how to use software and technology in general. And all of the formats are video presentations. So people are explaining to you, like, how do I use Microsoft Word or Excel or way more complicated software than
Photoshop or something.
Right. Yeah.
PowerPoint.
and it's got all levels. So it's got things for beginners. It has things for intermediate people. It's got advanced. And it also has skills and paths. So if you're interested in, say, learning how to code, you can go online and pick the path that says, I want to be a coder. And it will have hours upon hours of instruction. First, you should learn C++. And then you should learn PHP. And then you should, I'm making up the order, by the way. And then you should learn this, and then you should learn that. And each course has hours of instruction, and you can watch the whole thing. You can go to the part that most interests you or not. And so all of this is free through the library with your library card. So lynda.com, normally it's a subscription service. It costs about $50 a month if you're paying for it. But you can log in with your library card number and your PIN number, and you have access to all of these.
And it's Lynda, L-Y-N-D-A.
That is true.
Yeah, and I know Andy actually learned how to edit audio by watching lynda.com.
It's true. I took a course on how to use Audacity, which is this free open source software for editing audio, because I needed to do that for my job. And so suddenly I could do my job by watching these videos and following along. And there's downloadable exercise files so you can follow along with the presenter and work on the same things that they're working on. It is a very, very neat service.
And it's, I mean, a lot of people have probably Googled something, how do I make my stupid computer work, and got a YouTube video that may or may not have helped them. But this is not so ad hoc and open-ended as a YouTube video. This is actually a curriculum for proficiency in these technical computing skill areas.
Exactly. And it also provides if you do an entire course. And I believe the introduction to Microsoft Word course is 8 hours long. And if you do the whole course, they'll give you a certificate so that you can prove to employers or potential people I actually studied this. I know what I'm doing, which is really nice. Anyway, so
lynda.com, just one more excellent service available to anyone who is able to go and use the libraries here in Alaska's capital city.
And has a library card.
And has a library card.
And it's September's library card sign-up month, so if you don't have a library card, we can help you out with that too.
Or if you're like me and you have a really, really old one and you think your library account may have been deactivated through non-use, you could bring that old card in, and no harm. If it works, it works. If not, we can set up a new one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and if you're one of those kids out there who lost your library card, come on in and talk to us, because maybe we can help you replace that.
All right. Well, Beth Weigel, Andy Hirsch from Juneau's Public Libraries, thank you both so much. You've shared a wealth of information. So again, you can look on the library's Facebook page or on the City and Borough of Juneau webpage, and there are specific references to all these wonderful upcoming activities.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you, ladies, very much. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Just come on by the library. It's a great time of the year for sitting in the library, reading a book, and hanging out with us.
Very good. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 6th of September, 2016. It was on this date, 1847, Henry David Thoreau left Walden Pond after spending 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days living in his cabin on the shore, during which time he had written a book, A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers, and he had kept a journal. It's the birthday of the social reformer Jane Addams, born in Cedarville, Illinois, 1860, born to a wealthy Quaker family. She was the eighth of nine children. Her father owned flour and lumber mills. She developed tuberculosis of the spine. She had a curvature of the spine, spent a lot of time in bed reading the work of Charles Dickens, and she thought perhaps she had a calling to work for the poor and the needy. She traveled with her friend Ellen Starr to Europe for 21 months, where she saw settlement houses in the East End of London. And she and Ellen came back to Chicago in 1889 and leased a mansion at the corner of Halsted and Polk Streets, which they named Hull House, and it set out to help more than 2,000 people a week. She was particularly touched by the plight of immigrant children who were often left at home all day, sometimes tied to chairs while their parents worked. And so Hull House opened a daycare and the first public playground in the city of Chicago. It was the beginning of a settlement house movement, and by 1920 there were almost 500 of them across the country. It's the birthday of the writer Fanny Wright, Dundee, Scotland, 1795, visited this country in 1818 and wrote a book about it, Views of Society and Manners in America, came out in 1821. And it's the birthday of the writer Alice Sebold, Madison, Wisconsin, 1963, whose breakthrough novel was her very first novel, The Lovely Bones, came out in 2002, story of a 14-year-old girl raped, murdered, who narrates the whole novel from heaven while looking down on her family and her murderer. Her most recent novel, The Almost Moon, came out 9 years ago. Here's a poem for today by David Budbill, The Shining Moment in the Now. When I work outdoors all day, every day as I do now in the fall, getting ready for winter, tearing up the garden, digging potatoes, gathering the squash, cutting firewood, making kindling, repairing bridges over the brook, clearing trails in the woods, doing the last of the fall mowing, pruning apple trees, taking down the screens, putting up the storm windows, banking the house, all these things as preparation for the coming cold. When I am every day, all body and no mind, when I am physically, wholly, and completely in this world, with the birds, the deer, the sky, the wind, the trees, when day after day I think of nothing but what the next chore is, when I go from clearing woods roads to sharpening a chainsaw to changing the oil in a mower to stacking wood, when I'm all body and no mind, when I am only here and now and nowhere else, then and only then do I see the crippling power of mind, the curse of thought, and I pause and wonder why I so seldom find this shining moment in the now. The Shining Moment in the Now, a poem by David Budbill, from While We've Still Got Feet, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 24 and a half minutes after the hour this Tuesday, the 6th of September. I am Ben Brown. This is a Juno Afternoon. And Steve Kosis is here from the Marie Drake Planetarium to talk about this evening's show. Welcome, Steve.
Do not fear. Steve is here. Thanks, Ben. So 7 p.m. tonight, Marie Drake Planetarium, 1415 Glacier Avenue. We're doing a show, The Mathematical Universe. We're going to cover dark energy and dark matter. And dark means unknown.
Unlike antimatter. I made that perilous mistake right before we went on the air. So just a real basic reminder, matter is?
Well, the matter, as we know it, is only 5% of the universe. So dark matter and dark energy is the other 95%. So you could say that the matter that we know and love is the strange part of the universe.
Right. It's the...
The minority.
It's a very small minority that's running the show, or at least we think it is, from our 5% matter perspective.
So there is scientific evidence for dark energy and dark matter. The Nobel Prize in 2011 was given to the three scientists who saw that supernovas in distant galaxies were much fainter than expected, which was showing the acceleration of the universe, and the only explanation is dark energy. Dark matter, observations of galaxies, the galaxies are rotating much, much faster than would be allowed for the matter that's observed. So that's the dark matter observation from science.
All right. And so this is going to be presented this evening, and then there'll be a night sky on the planetarium screen to follow the actual lecture?
Yes. We have an analog projector installed in 1967, the largest dome in the state. And it's a Spitz made in Pennsylvania. It still works. So we'll be using that for what the sky would look like if it was clear. Last time it was clear, we saw the Northern Lights, actually.
Yes, we were just talking about that. There has been some good auroral activity of late. Maybe not so much tonight. Tonight would be a good time to go inside and look at the sky on a planetarium screen.
And we'll be doing that.
Excellent. So what sort of attendance do you customarily get at these Marie Drake Planetarium presentations? Does it vary greatly from event to event?
It varies greatly from event to event. So usually we get 20 or 30 people.
And are there certain regulars who come every single time?
I believe so. I'm one of them. We have a nonprofit group that runs the planetarium, and I'm one of the volunteers. Clark Branch, John Kremers, Christina De La Rosa, the other volunteers.
Well, that's obviously very important to have a dedicated cadre of people who are committed to the cause. Do you do any sort of outreach to the university? I don't know if there's any courses there that really touch on this sort of a scientific subject area, or to the high schools to strengthen your ranks with younger people coming in.
Well, I'm an adjunct at the university. I teach astronomy there, so maybe that's a type of outreach. And one of our other volunteers does an online course in astronomy at the university. And we do presentations at the school. So anyone who's interested in a presentation, just contact mariedrakeplanetarium.org. And if a volunteer is available, we'll do a show.
All right. So that's in addition to coming tonight. And tonight's show is going to be at 7 p.m. and it's free and it's open to all ages.
That is true.
Now, some younger would-be astronomers might have a little bit of a difficult time wrapping their heads around dark matter and dark energy. Is there a way to break it down? I mean, and I guess I could say the same thing for some older potential attendees as well. Is there a way to break it down so it's an apprehensible topic for people of not that advanced education?
I have some pretty pictures.
Pictures are obviously always very good.
Definitely. Well, the information or the model for astronomy, other than meteorites that fall to Earth, is all mathematical. So you can say, in a sense, we have a mathematical universe, because that's because the properties of light is how we learn about astronomy. And the properties of light are from quantum mechanics, which is very mathematical, infinite dimensional Hilbert space. So that'll be enough. I won't talk about that. But it is a mathematical universe.
All right. And the show's going to begin with the lecture at 7 p.m. About how long will it run this evening?
Well, the lecture will be about half an hour, and the projector time will be about half an hour.
All right,
so less than an hour. It'll be out at 8 p.m.
And at 7, out at 8, and if the sky should clear up, plenty of time to see the Northern Lights here above Juno tonight.
Yes, and I have another event to add. We're doing a garage sale for the planetarium. We're going to accept donations tonight and donations on Friday from 5 to 7 p.m., and the garage sale for the planetarium will be Saturday, September 10th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And that's a fundraiser for the Friends Group.
It's a fundraiser for the Friends of the Marie Drake Planetarium. The nonprofit group that runs the planetarium is also joined up with the Alzheimer's group here in town. So it's going to be a joint garage sale.
And where will that take place?
It'll be right at the planetarium.
Oh, very easy
and
to find.
And we'll do some shows for the young people, and I'll turn on the projector. Well, we'll do the garage sale September 10th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
All right, so that is the Friends of the Marie Drake Planetarium in conjunction with an Alzheimer's support group here in town.
True.
Having a garage sale this weekend, but the main event is tonight at 7 p.m. at Marie Drake. So if you are interested in learning more about dark energy and dark matter, just show up.
And the mathematical universe.
Very good. Thank you so much, Steve Kosis, and I hope you have a very successful event this evening.
Thank you, Ben Brown.
Some of you who have small children may have perhaps been put in the embarrassing position of being unable to do your child's arithmetic homework because of the current revolution in mathematics teaching known as the new math. So as a public service here tonight, I thought I would offer a brief lesson in the new math. Tonight, we're going to cover subtraction. This is the first room I've worked for a while. It didn't have a blackboard, so we will have to make do with more primitive visual aids, as they say in the ed biz. Consider the following subtraction problem, which I will put up here. 342 minus 173. Now, remember how we used to do that. 3 from 2 is 9, carry the 1. And if you're under 35 or went to a private school, you say 7 from 3 is 6. But if you're over 35 and went to a public school, you say 8 from 4 is 6. And carry the 1, so we have 169. But in the new approach, as you know, the important thing is to understand what you're doing rather than to get the right answer. Here's how they do it now. You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the tens place. Now that's really 4 tens, so you make it 3 tens, regroup, and you change a 10 to 10 ones, and you add them to the 2 and get 12, and you take away 3, that's 9. Is that clear? Now instead of 4 in the tens place, you've got 3 because you added 1, that is to say 10 to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look in the hundreds place. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 10 ones, and you know why 4 plus minus 1 plus 10 is 14 minus 1, because addition is commutative, right? And so you got 13 tens, and you take away 7, and that leaves 5. Well, 6, actually, but the idea is the important thing. Now go back to the hundreds place. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Everybody get 1? Not bad for the first day. Hooray for new math, new math. It won't do you a bit of good to review math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Now that actually is not the answer that I had in mind, because the book that I got this problem out of wants you to do it in base 8. But don't panic. Base 8 is just like base 10, really, if you're missing 2 fingers. Shall we have a go at it? Hang on. You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the 8's place. Now that's really 4 8's, so you make it 3 8's, regroup, and you change an 8 to 8 1's, and you add to the 2, and you get 1 2 base 8, which is 10 base 10, and you take away 3, that's 7. Okay? Now instead of 4 in the 8's place, you've got 3 because you added 1, that is to say 8, to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look at the 64's. 64. How did 64 get into it? I hear you cry. Well, 64 is 8 squared, don't you see? When you ask a silly question, you get a silly answer. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 8 1's. You add those 1's to the 3, and you get 1 3 base 8, or in other words, in base 10, you have 11, and you take away 7, and 7 from 11 is 4. Now go back to the 64's. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Now, let's not always see the same hands. One, that's right. Whoever got 1 can stay after the show and clean the erasers. Hooray for new math, new math. It won't do you a bit of good to review math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Come back tomorrow night. We're gonna do fractions. You know, I've often thought I'd like to write a mathematics textbook someday because I have a title that I know will sell a million copies. I'm going to call it Tropic of Calculus. Yes.
And that was Tom Lehrer from That Was the Year That Was, 1965, The New Math, which is, of course, what all dark energy, dark matter science is based on. So there was a nexus there if you didn't get that. Ben Brown here, 34, almost 35 minutes after the hour on a Juno afternoon this Tuesday, the 6th of September. And Drew Fenster and Brad Orr from the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center are here from the Forest Service. And we may be joined by another person who's in the know about some of the things going on with the Mendenhall Recreation Area Master Plan. But if not, Brad Orr, you're in the hot seat. Tell us what you know about the master planning process.
Well, this is a very exciting time for us on the Juneau Ranger District and specifically at Mendenhall. We have been looking forward to this day for at least 3 years. We've been gearing up to partner with a design team such as Corvus Design to lead a process where the public is working with us through a series of what is known as design charrettes to address some of the growing issues that we're facing in the recreation area, issues such as overcrowding, impacts to facilities, impacts to natural resources. So we're really at the very beginning of this process. We're very excited to be here, and thanks for inviting us in.
So there's a press release that's been issued in relation to this planning process, and it states that it's over 500,000 people are going to visit the visitor center this summer before all is said and done out there. That's a pretty huge amount of love that we see people showing for the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Is that manageable? Is it sustainable? I guess those are some of the questions the planning process seeks to ask and have answered.
Yeah, we're doing pretty well. We have a really top-notch staff and crews that are working in the recreation area. The Visitor Center, of course, is under the expert leadership of John Neary, and then the rest of the recreation area, like the campgrounds and the picnic sites, are under the leadership of Ed Grossman. And they and their staff and crews do a fantastic job of managing a really pretty small area that's intensively visited by the public, both Juneau residents and visitors, primarily from cruise ships.
All right. So one thing, of course, that you want to disabuse people of the mistake of thinking, this isn't just about the Glacier Visitor Center. It's about the entire recreation area, right?
That's right. And I also like to say how proud we are of our transporters, commercial guides, partners, and volunteers who work throughout the entire recreation area and bring those great experiences to our visitors. We definitely could not do it without them.
And the cruise ship visitors often tend to come and just get to the glacier area, but there's dredge lakes and there's the campground on the other side. So there's a lot of elements that are used year-round by Juneau residents, and they would be people who would be really wise to listen to what we're talking about and come tomorrow night and involve themselves in this planning process.
Exactly right. We really encourage the public, especially here in Juneau, to come participate in these charrettes. You don't have to attend every single meeting. These meetings are going to go on for quite some time. But if you have any interest whatsoever in the management, the future, we're actually going to be looking 20, even 50 years into the future. So this is an opportunity, at least at the beginning, to dream big, give us your vision for the area, what's important to you, what matters to you, how you'd like to see this area managed on into the future. What are the opportunities that you would like to see for Juneau residents as well as our growing number of cruise ship visitors?
Do you expect to have a lot of participation in the planning process from representatives of the visitor industry?
We think so. Corvus Design is pulling together a group of what we call key stakeholders. These are prominent folks from tourism business, agencies. We will be meeting with them concurrently with the general public so that we can really focus in on matters that are of particular interest to them.
Very good. And you mentioned that this is going to be going on for quite some time. This meeting tomorrow night, which is at the Forest Service headquarters, 8150 Mendenhall Loop 85, Road?
8510 oh. Mendenhall Loop Road.
Sorry, I transposed the number there. It's that beautiful building on the right when you turn off onto Mendenhall Loop Road there. That's the first of many meetings. But what is the timeline for the completion of the master plan?
Well, the contract with Corvus is a two-year contract. And what is the deliverables for them are a conceptual plan for the entire recreation area. Then they'll focus in on a master plan for the visitor center area, which is the visitor center building and the highly developed facilities around the visitor center. And then finally, they will
We've been joined by Chris Myrtle, who will have more words of wisdom to share about this process. But at any rate, so there's some discrete parts to the plan, one for the entire recreation area, and then a sub-plan, if you will, for the Glacier Visitor Center.
Correct. And then we will take the Visitor Center Master Plan through what we call the NEPA process. It's an environmental assessment that leads to, finally, a decision notice to actually begin to implement the results of these design charrettes.
And NEPA is the federal law, the National Environmental Policy Act, that applies to almost anything that happens anywhere on federal land at any time in any way, shape, or form. So, Chris Myrtle, welcome to a Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you.
And if you want to tell us a little bit about your involvement in the Mendenhall Recreation Area Master Planning process.
Well, Corvus Design, a local landscape architectural firm, is leading a pretty substantial team to help Brad and the Forest Service really come up with what we're calling a conceptual development plan. Now, as Brad was saying, looking at the whole 6,000 acres, focusing in on the visitor center, doing our NEPA work, and then finishing up our work based on what we find on NEPA.
And are you looking forward to the meeting tomorrow evening? And do you expect some good participation? You've been trying to get the word out, so you have a lot of people there?
Yeah, most certainly. No, definitely enjoy these public charrettes. Tomorrow's is kind of just an introductory of the project to the public. So we're going to let people know what's going on. But we also have some fun exercises where we're going to have people come in, tell us about their favorite places, where do they use, what activities. So again, a lot of this information right now has kind of been hearsay over the years and years. But now we're trying to get some factual information so we can start taking this information and making sure that the conceptual development plan really responds to the needs of not just the visitors, but the locals here in Juneau.
Excellent. Now, will there be anyone from Marie Claire magazine there?
No, because we told them to disappear with the glacier.
I'm sorry. Anyway, wasn't following that. Google disappearing Mendenhall Glacier and all will become clear to you.
It's pretty funny.
So where is there an online resource, if anywhere, where people can go learn more about the meeting tomorrow, the charrettes, and also the timeline of this process so they can plan accordingly about being as involved as they would like to be?
Sure. We are setting up a website. It hasn't been established yet. We're still working out Forest Service protocol, making sure everything is above board. So we're working out some of the smaller details. But our hope is to get a website set up towards the end of this week or first thing next week. That's going to be a clearinghouse for all the information. But I do want to reiterate that this is a Forest Service plan, but it's also a public plan. They definitely want to have public involvement and make sure it is an inclusive process that gets all the stakeholders, the users, everyone from the dog walkers to the tour operators to the people that go to the ice caves to the people that just kind of hang out in their car and look at the glacier or go birding. There's such a wide variety of users. And it's a large area. It's 6,000 acres. So it's really I have to give credit to the Forest Service. Instead of focusing in right away and hitting what are the immediate needs right now that need to be dealt with, let's look at the whole 6,000 acres. That's something that hasn't really been studied in the past. So I think it's smart that they're taking a big picture view, figuring out what the needs, what are the opportunities, what are some of the constraints, and then from that point, then focusing in on some of the short-term needs.
And that long-term analysis, of course, has the potential benefit of helping to allocate resources in Congress. I mean, our congressional delegation will look at the work that's been done and take that to others and say, hey, we actually need resources for this or for that. And we'll probably increase our chances of getting those resources if we've got a good, thorough basis of public input and thoughtful process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most certainly.
Excellent. So again, if you want to recap about the meeting tomorrow night, where it is, when it is, and what people can do to prepare in advance if they'd like to show up.
Yeah, if you'd like to participate, we'd love to have you. We're at the U.S. Forest Service Juneau Ranger District office on the Back Loop Road, 8510 Mendenhall Loop Road. It's from 6:30 to 8:30 tomorrow evening. Hope to see you there.
All right, Chris, anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I'd also like to plug that we have our second charrette coming up on the Tuesday following. So that is on the 13th, if I'm doing 13th. The math mm-hmm. correct. Also, same time, same location, 6:30. So what we really want to do is make sure that we're getting both the locals, but also there's some tour operators that have some input that we want to get before they take off for the season so that we can get their input as well in terms of coming up with the conceptual development plan. So that is the following Tuesday, the 13th at 6:30, also at JRD, Juneau Ranger District. So that'll be the second, and we're going to be moving along as we get public involvement. So that next meeting is going to focus kind of on opportunities and constraints of the MGRA.
Excellent. And of course, as we were discussing before you were able to join us, Chris, so much of the use of the Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area is by non-residents. You know, it's a seasonal use, but we want to accommodate those people, but we mm-hmm. also want to make sure that locals have every opportunity to chime in with what they think is important and what they would like to see.
Most certainly, yeah. It's for everybody, and we've definitely heard that from the Forest Service.
Excellent. All right. Well, Chris Myrtle, Drew Fenster, and Brad Orr, thank you all for coming on a Juneau afternoon today. And I hope you have a very good turnout for the first of these charrettes and the whole planning process goes very well.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
And it's 51 minutes after the hour. That was Steve Rivera's This Ancient Road from his album Dividing the Darkness. And my final guest today on Juno Afternoon, this Tuesday, the 6th of September, is Brian Holst from, among other things, the Juno School Board.
Good afternoon, Ben.
So welcome to a Juno Afternoon. And we are first going to talk about something that is a new development for the Juno School District, the Juno School Board, which is an open house for families and community members. So when is that going to be and whose idea was that?
Great. Well, that is going to happen on next Tuesday, September 13th at 4:30 at Thunder Mountain High School. And that is the time right before our regular monthly board meeting. So as you said, I'm on the Board of Education. And the idea behind this meeting is to create, to the degree we can, an informal environment for people in the community to talk to board members. And there will also be staff there as well. But it's primarily an opportunity for us to be able to interact with the public in a much more relaxed environment. I think for anyone that's, you know, testified in front of the assembly or had a chance to speak in front of the school board, it can be somewhat intimidating. You have to prepared remarks to a certain degree, and we only give you a minute or 2 minutes, and no opportunity for us to sort of enter into dialogue. And so we were trying to think of, how do we really have a chance to chat more openly, more freely? As you well know, the Open Meetings Act makes it hard for us to hold two informal events because you can't have only a certain number of elected officials can be in the same place at the same time without public notice. So this is the idea that we came up with to experiment to see if we can't generate an environment that's casual and lets people ask questions about various issues.
All right. So that's going to be next Tuesday, the 13th, out at Thunder Mountain High School, and it's an open house. Again, some listeners may have gone to an open house at the elementary school or the junior high or the high school where their students go, but this is for anyone, not even a parent necessarily of a current student, but anyone who's interested in the school board and the school district and what's going on with education policy in our community.
That's right. And we're going to try to structure it as informally as we can. So what we hope is that if there's a good turnout, we'll have there's 7 board members and the superintendent, of course, will be there. And we will try to anticipate a few areas that we know that people are interested in. You know, for example, we'll come up with people will ask us, wouldn't it make more sense to have just one high school versus 2 high schools? And actually, not only is it seem to be better for our kids to have 2 high schools, but we get more money by having 2 high schools than we would with 1 high school, which just seems counterintuitive to folks, for example. So those are an opportunity for folks to ask that question or any question that they have about the school district.
Excellent. All right. And so that's the open house coming up next Tuesday. Any other things you'd like to share quickly about what's going on with the school district?
Well, I think the school district is doing a lot of things really, really well. It's an exciting school year, where enrollment is up, which is great, because we've seen in Juneau sort of a steady decline in Juneau and throughout the state. I mean, the state, it's not a Juneau phenomena. Just the aging population, the way the demographics are in our state is that we used to be a really young state. We're looking more like the rest of the nation. And so throughout the state of Alaska, the number of kids in grade school have been going down. But we're hoping to see that end. And the fact that we're up by maybe 100 kids this year, it might signal that we're finally seeing that process through and might be rebounding again.
And people have probably heard about the somewhat surprising uptick in enrollments as schools started this year. Is there a place that people can go if they want to learn more about the facts and the figures that are driving the policy discussions in our school district?
They should come to the open house.
Well, in addition to that, are there any online resources that people actually want to do their homework?
Absolutely. There's the Juneau School District website. Kristen Bartlett does an excellent job of keeping that up to date. And so there are resources there, of course. There's probably too many resources in some way. So don't feel like you need to be prepared when you show up next Tuesday, but feel free to go and noodle around, find more information.
Excellent.
About our schools.
Excellent. All right, well, we're almost out of time here, Brian. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on a Juno Afternoon today?
Well, I want to give a shout out to Lisa Worrell and Barbara Thurston, two of our board members that have opted not to re-up for re-election. They've both served two terms, done an outstanding job. You know, some of the priorities that we've identified at the school district is investing in early childhood, STEM education. We have a really vibrant arts community that's been really engaging with our school district and offering opportunities that link, overlap from outside the community back into our schools as well.
Excellent. Okay, well, Brandholz from the Juneau School Board, thank you so much. And the open house is again next Tuesday night, the 13th, out at Thunder Mountain High School. And I wish you a very successful school year, and I hope you get a lot of people showing up.
Thanks, Ben. Mm-hmm.
This is Bird Note. Autumn brings millions of ducks flying south after nesting in the north. In most parts of North America, fall migration brings the greatest diversity of ducks we'll see all year. Golden eyes, scaup, widgeons, and other species join familiar year-round ducks, such as mallards. Take a close look at autumn's ducks as they forage on the water. Some dabble, while others dive. Dabbling ducks, like the widgeons we're hearing, feed by dipping their bills in water just below the surface or dunking head first so all you see are their tails pointing skyward. They strain bits of vegetation and small invertebrates with their flattened bills. Diving ducks, including scaup and mergansers, forage while swimming underwater using their feet or wings for propulsion. Divers with narrow pointed bills snatch fish, while those with flatter bills, like common golden eyes, search along the bottom for invertebrates such as small clams. When you stop by a lake or saltwater beach this fall, keep an eye out for dabblers and divers. And take your time, because the divers may pop into view only when they need to catch a breath of air. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, in partnership with KTOO, is thrilled to bring Grammy-nominated musician Madis Yahoo to Juneau on September 23rd. Expect an intimate, supercharged performance that blends reggae, beatboxing, hip-hop, singer-songwriting, and a whole lot of soul. Tickets at the Jack and Hearthside Books. Madis Yahoo in Juneau, September 23rd.
And it is a little over 1 minute before the hour. This is a Juneau afternoon, Tuesday, the 6th of September. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Ben Brown. The weather forecast, very quickly, is pretty much for rain all week, but it's supposed to be sunny on Sunday. So let's look forward to that.